You're listening to the Fresh Hell Podcast. Fresh Hell contains stories of a disturbing and often graphic nature and is intended for a mature audience. Please don't let your kids listen to this, or they might turn out like us.
Hi, I'm Annie from the USA.
And I'm Johanna from Austria. Thanks for listening to another episode of Fresh Hell, your favorite international podcast. And don't worry if it's your first time listening to us. We will be your favorite soon enough.
We hope so. Anyhow, yeah. We want to give a special shout out to our newest patron. Thank you very much to, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Nisa. Would you say that's Nisa or Nisa?
I would say Nisa, but...
Nisa? It's a really pretty name either way. Thanks, Nisa Mallory. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for your support. We really couldn't do it without you, actually.
Yeah, all of you, whether you're a part of our Patreon or if you tell your friends about us or share a link to your favorite episode in a different group you're in, we really appreciate it. So today, I have to tell you all that I was going to say I wanted to do a lighter episode this week. I really just needed a lighter episode this week. I'm right now finally planning my mother's funeral. Some of you know she passed away a little over a year ago, and now we're just finally able to do that. So I'm planning mom's funeral, and my physical health has been awful, and I just didn't want to spend my week reading a bunch of terrible stories of murder and sadness. So today, it's just going to be a little bit more relaxed. It's a little bit more chatty. So if you hate it when we do that, just skip this one. There's so many. If you're new, there are more than 100 gruesome, macabre, awful episodes to listen to. You know, awful in the good way. There's more than 110 episodes in our backlog. So pick a different one. The upside is, if you are also sad and exhausted, this episode is just a little bit lighter, and so you might like it. Can say.
We are going to talk about some of history's most interesting coincidences, and yes, they can mostly be explained by probability, and some of you might say, well, it's not that odd, and you will be able to explain everything logically.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like to think there's more out there than just pure coincidences, and that's why I'm super excited for this episode.
Yeah.
And these stories are some of our favorites. We're going to tell you about them, then discuss how weird we think they are. And as Annie said, this is a bit more, you know, bantery than usual.
You know what? There are a lot of great podcasts out there that you can listen to that are also completely free with no banter. So...
yeah, no laughing.
Nope. No laughing ever, no matter how nice the carpets might have been. All right. So I'm excited for this today. So we're going to talk about some of history's most infamous coincidences, those things that make you go, hmm.
Yeah, with three M's and the other way around from our history episode.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Why don't you start?
Okay. So let's begin with the psychic license plate. Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were assassinated on 28th of June 1914 in Sarajevo, and the assassination itself had a number of weird coincidences coincidences on its own. It's very interesting,
yeah,
actually.
It is, and if you haven't already listened to our two-parter on the Habsburgs, then you will know more about the background on the assassination and, of course, the assassination itself, but we're not covering that today. This is the happy episode.
That's right. But what you do need to know is that the event is literally the match that ignited the powder keg that was the Habsburgian Empire, full of a lot of nationalist problems, and therefore this event is considered to be the one that started the First World War. It's not the reason, but it's, you know, the drop.
Yeah, it was the final. It was the straw that broke the camel's toe.
Exactly that. Camel toes are hard to break, but...
they are. They are tough. They are prepared for sand and heat. Not straw.
So, First World War, it lasted from 28th of July 1914 to 11th of November 1918. Now, the license plate on the car that Franz Ferdinand and his beloved Sophie were assassinated in, the license plate read A111118, which many read as Armistice 11th of November 18, so 1918.
Yeah, I actually think this one is pretty creepy, and I don't know how this one escaped me for so long. Now, Would there have been, because I know in Europe a lot of the time your plates mean something, right? Do yours, do you know?
No.
Okay.
What do they mean?
Well, like, I mean, like, the number, it'll be, like, the year the car was, because the plate goes with the car.
Oh, no, no. Well, not in Austria, no. Here it's, like, okay. Consecutive numbers from the district where you're living. And you have to register your car where you're living, and then it's consecutive numbers. And the only thing you can read from our cars, it's the letters that indicate where you are from, which district.
Right. And then does the plate, if you were going to sell the car, does the plate stay on, go with the car, or do you keep the plate for your next car? So I think, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in England, the plate goes with the car. It's like more to do with the car itself. And then, whereas like here, you keep the plate and you transfer it to your next car when you get another car. That's the only thing I wasn't sure about. Like, is there any way in which those particular numbers would have made sense? Or, like, was it the eighth car they owned? Or I don't know. I think it's super creepy.
I just think it was a consecutive number.
I think?
Yeah, definitely.
It's also interesting, though, because Europe and America, often numbers are confusing because we do them differently. So in America, we do, what do? We do the day, then the month, then the year. And in Europe, you do, in the UK, you do the month and the day and the year.
No. I think the rest of the world, we do day, month, year.
Yeah, it's just us.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
Right. There's a whole episode on Schitt's Creek about it where she gets her, Alexis gets, anyway, her flight date's confused, shows up at the wrong time.
I almost had my makeup artist for my wedding show up months later.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And she was like, see you in March. And I'm like, no, see you in December.
It's a good thing you caught that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing that I find particularly interesting about this one is that World War One involved both countries. Well, a lot of countries, but including the US. Wait, did it? Did we fight in World War One?
Yeah, you came late.
Anyway, my point just being that it's interesting to me because America and Europe were both involved and it reads the same either way, which doesn't always happen.
11th of November is beginning of Carnival, you know.
Oh, well, that sounds fun.
I think it's fun. It's interesting. I don't think there's anything to it. It's just, and as I say, it's just a consecutive number here.
I don't know. I think it would be interesting because you can see the car is on display at the museum, right?
Yeah.
So there's this blood-soaked car, and then you look at the license plate, which is, it could be fake. Listen, that's the other thing we should mention about this episode. All of this, take it with a grain of salt, please. So this next one is even more explainable, statistically speaking, but I still find it a little bit interesting. So Mark Twain was the pen name of Samuel Clemens. If you're an American, you probably know him as Mark Twain, and you probably read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer when you were in school, or if you've been to Disney World, maybe you know Tom Sawyer Island, or maybe you're a Rush fan, who can say? There are a lot of ways to get to know about Tom Sawyer. Mark Twain was one of them. Anyhow, this beloved American author was born on the 30th of November, or November 30th, 1935, in Florida, Missouri, because America isn't confusing enough without naming cities after states.
Yeah, there's also a Kansas City, Missouri, right? Because that always confused me before I learned.
That's
Kansas City, not in Kansas.
What's going on, Missouri? Apologies, to be fair, for not being able to remember how to pronounce St. Louis in the Lindbergh episode. I think I was briefly possessed by the musical theater goddess that was Judy Garland. It happens. But Kansas City, Florida? I mean, I don't know. Here in Massachusetts, we mostly used up all the names in England. So any English-sounding name like Barnstable, all the Cape names that some people struggle with are also in England. Fun fact, Warwick, Rhode Island, is pronounced Warwick, England, in Warwickshire. Fun castle. Highly recommended. But yeah, anyway, I don't know what the deal is with the Show Me State. It's like by the time they got settled, they were just, let's go with the other states' names that we like. I don't know. It's confusing to me. My mom was born in St. Louis. She loves Missouri. She pronounces it differently than I do, Missouri. Anyhow, apologies. We love you. But yeah, what about place names in Austria?
Well, our big cities are mostly named, well, they just changed the names of the Roman settlements that were there before, like Wien from Vindobona, or from Slavic names like Graz from Gradec. Some other places, especially small towns and villages, they are named after something characteristic for this place. Like I was raised in Solena, and it got its name from a tree that's called Saalweide because there were a lot of these trees there. And over time, you see it changed, mostly because they just made spelling mistakes. You can see that in historic documents. And I think that's super interesting.
Absolutely.
So most of our city names have grown over time. But also we have the advantage we didn't have to name a bunch of new places all at once. You know what I mean?
I do. Our country is enormous. So it's like the same with our robins. I think we've probably already talked about this, but American robins are, I love them, but they are a little bit predatory looking. And when you see a robin in England, it's like they're so cute and round and sweet and like bird with a B at the end. Like they're adorable, even though they can also be quite aggressive sometimes. But I absolutely adore them. They look nothing alike. They're not remotely similar birds. They just both had a red breast. So when the English colonists arrived, they were like, oh, look, that bird's got a red breast. It's an American robin. And here we are. It's just, yeah, I get it. I mean,
they had other things to do, like surviving.
It was difficult. Yeah. All right. So Mark Twain is born. And the only interesting thing, well, I don't know. I don't know his birth story. We're not going there. But he was born during Halley's Comet. I guess it was actually technically 2 weeks after its closest approach to the Earth. Now, if you're too young to remember the huge buildup and then sort of visibility of this comet when it was last here in 1986. It wasn't as bad as the letdown as the Al Capone's tomb situation, but it was kind of up there. It's a comet that's visible from Earth every 75 to 76 years. The next time it will be visible is sometime in mid-2061. It's also the only comet that you can see with the naked eye from Earth that may appear twice in your lifetime. That feels like a copy-paste from Wikipedia. Anyhow, that's a little bit more comet trivia. So in 1909, Samuel Clemens was quoted as saying, quote, I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It's coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it. It will be the greatest disappointment of my life if I don't go out with Halley's Comet. The Almighty has said no doubt. Now here are these two unaccountable freaks. They came in together. They must go out together. End quote. And he was right. He died of a heart attack on April 21st, 1910. Do I think it's spooky he predicted this? Not really.
I mean, he didn't predict it. He wanted it. It was his wish, no?
It was his wish. It's true. And he was born when the comet was here and died at age 75, which is the predicted annual visit. So there are probably hundreds of thousands of people who were born and died at the same time as the comet. And I don't think this is all that remarkable. Creep factor super low on this one, but I do have some interesting Mark Twain facts, Samuel Clemens facts, just in case we're ever allowed to go back to pubs for like pub quiz or trivia night, whatever. He was the sixth of seven children, but as was not uncommon then, only three of them made it to adulthood. We're not getting into that, except to pause for a moment and remember his brother, who passed at only age 3 months old, and his brother's name was Pleasant Hannibal. I'm not making fun of a dead baby's name. That's And Hannibal was the town in Missouri on the Mississippi where they lived. And it was the fictional town in Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn books, St. Petersburg in the novels. And this is like way before Hannibal Lecter, but I just find it like as a family name, if you could resurrect that, I think that's a really interesting. People don't name their children so interestingly anymore. Pleasant Hannibal. Mark Twain was also an early member of the Society of Psychical Research, which we discussed briefly in the Enfield episode. In 1858, his younger brother, Henry Clemens, was mortally injured in a boiler explosion on a steamboat that Mark had convinced him to work on with him. Mark Twain loved working on steamboats, and so he convinced his younger brother that he would also love it. And then there was an accident, and his brother died about a week later. And the creepy thing is that Mark Twain had apparently dreamed the entire thing a month earlier, but had dismissed it as a nightmare. He then felt like it was a vision he didn't act on and never forgave himself. He was also an early proponent of the use of fingerprinting to solve crime, the first American author to do so, and he wrote about it 10 years before it was actually used to solve a crime.
First of all, if that happened and he had a dream, I get that he felt guilty, but how could he have known? Like, I have nightmares all the time. And if I would act on all of them, I wouldn't do anything else. But I find precognitive dreams very interesting. I personally have no idea what to think about them because I never had one. Hellions, if you have experienced dreaming about stuff that later came true, please, please send us an email because we want to hear everything about it.
Yeah, I've actually had a few and they're disconcerting because, like you just said, at the time, you think you just had a very vivid nightmare. And then when it happens, you're sort of stunned and like you do feel like you should have done something. It's not a good feeling. No me gusta. But yeah, I would love to hear our listeners' experiences, but email us so we can make it an episode somewhere down the line if we want to. Don't post all your best stories in the Facebook group. Email us. Keep that shit secret. Mm-hmm. All right, what's next?
Next, we go to France for the Comet family home, which was hit by a meteor.
Yeah, this one's just fun. That time the comets got hit by a meteor.
The info on this story is mostly from a 2011 Time article by Bruce Grumley. So in October of 2011, the Comet family returned from vacation to their home just outside Paris in France. And instead of the usual dust and, you know, empty refrigerator awaiting them on return from their travels, they were concerned to see what was clearly some water damage in one room. And so they called out a roofer to come take a look. And once the roofer laid eyes on the tile, he was very perplexed because he'd never seen anything smash tiles quite like that. Further investigation led to the discovery of a heat-blackened rock of some kind inside the home's insulation.
It makes you wonder if it was raining when it happened and that prevented a fire. You feel like they were just very lucky.
Yes, they were. So the Comets were able to get in touch with a Parisian meteorite expert by the name of Alain Carillon. And he confirmed what they suspected. It was, in fact, a meteorite. And to quote the Time article by Bruce Grumley, quote, "You cut it and look for the little metal grains of meteorite they're composed of," Carillon told French TV channel TF1 Monday, figuring the comet's heavenly stone is a type known as a chondrite. Quote, "It probably came from the belt of asteroids between Jupiter and Mars. No rock on Earth has this type of composition," end quote. What are the odds of a meteorite believed to predate Earth's solar system striking the suburban Paris home of people with a name like Comet? Steep, to say the least. Even in this age of improbable names and of junk periodically falling from space, Carillon says only about 50 meteorites have been known to have touched down on French soil in the past 400 years, and that, quote, "we've never found one within an 80-kilometer radius of Paris before," end quote. And the best news, no one was injured, and the family finds the coincidence very delightful.
And they have a wicked cool rock.
Yeah.
Space rock. Yeah.
And really, there was not too much damage to the house. So, as you said, I think they were really lucky. Yeah.
Yeah, they were very lucky. We have a photo that we'll post. It's not that big of a rock. It's like you can hold it between your thumb and forefinger. You know, it's only small, but you can imagine how much force to have completely shattered the tiles and like go through the roof. And yeah. What are the odds? I mean, Paul would literally tell me the odds, which is why I'm doing this podcast with you and not him. He ruins all my fun. He's immediately like, well, the probability of this. Okay. This next one is one of my favorites. It's a twin story.
Mine too.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me for two reasons. The first is the whole, of course, nature versus nurture question, right? And one thing that people who are not adopted really take for granted is just knowing, like, oh, well, for example, I've seen pictures of your dad as a kid, and I sincerely thought it was you. I was
like, a lot of people did.
Is that you? It's like exactly the same eyes. Exactly. And it's such an inherent thing in most families that you honestly probably don't really give it any thought. It's like, oh, yeah, I've totally got my dad's eyes, my mom's mouth, my great aunt's hair, you know, whatever it is, you know. And Moose and I laugh sometimes, and we say that the reason we probably are so close is that we're adopted and so completely different, like physically, just in every way, so different. My mother and my aunt loved each other very much, but they were like oil and water. And I know how common that is with sisters.
I find it so interesting with my sister and me, for example. My sister is completely like my mom, not only her character, but her looks, like old photos from my mom. And then me, character and looks are 100% my dad. It's so weird, I think, and so interesting that you're like go after one side or the other. And some people have a mix of both, yeah.
Absolutely. I've always found it fascinating. And just watching as my friends have children and watching them, because most babies, we might have discussed this before, most babies, they say look like their fathers initially when they're born, which is just it makes sense from a biological evolution standpoint that if you gave birth, you wanted the baby to look like its father to prove that, you know, so the father would help take care of you. We're going way back, you know what I mean? But it is funny because as you watch the baby grow, they really do change so much in that first couple of years as they sort of turn into the little person that they're going to be. And it's, I don't know, it's fascinating. So the other thing that is interesting is my dad has a twin. They are also total opposites in many ways, but there was a period of time where my uncle was living pretty far away from us for a while. And so we had not seen him in, oh gosh, it was like 10, 12 years that we hadn't seen my uncle. And so he comes for a visit, and my dad and my uncle had not seen each other in over a decade. My uncle turns up. I was just telling my sister that I was going to tell the story, and she reminded me. My uncle pulls up in the exact same car my dad drives. I forgot about that part. They are wearing exactly the same outfit, including the same winter coat, which was the same brand, color, size, everything that they had bought at different Filene's basement stores in different states. The only thing different was that my dad, who served in the Army and retired after Vietnam, was wearing loafers, and my uncle, who joined the Peace Corps and headed to South America, was wearing wool socks with Birkenstocks. It's like so weird.
This is so weird. That's so weird. Are they identical twins?
Yeah. And my uncle still lives in the area in Western Mass where we grew up. And so occasionally my dad will talk to somebody, you know, every so often you just end up catching up with somebody you haven't seen in 10 years or whatever. And they'll be like, thanks for ignoring me in the grocery store. Or sometimes he'll literally get like a snippy message from somebody. And my dad will be like, I'm so sorry. You probably ran into my uncle, whose name is also Jim, which is the same name of the twins that we're going to talk about today.
And do people sometimes think he's making up a twin brother just to be not like, you know?
Probably initially. I would guess probably. It depends on how he would say it, because my dad has this kind of sense of humor where he will, like that very dry, sarcastic sense of humor, where it would be a joke to if he had just missed somebody trying to wave, where he'd be like, oh, you must have been my twin. But nope, he really does have a twin who still lives where we had lived for a long time. So it's pretty funny. They do look a lot alike and sound a lot alike. And some of our best friends are also twins. And one of them had a daughter who's their fraternal twins. But I don't know, I'm fascinated with it. Let's talk about the famous Jim twins. The majority of this information is from the Minnesota Center for Twin and Family Research at the University of Minnesota. Also an old article from 1979 by Rosemary Rawson. So these two boys, twin boys, are born, and they are placed for adoption as infants. And I do not know what the hell went on with that adoption agency, and I'm not judging, but I do believe that both sets of parents would have loved to adopt both boys if given the chance. Like, had they been able to adopt the twins, they would have. But I think the first couple that adopted was told that there was a twin, but that twin had died. And then the other couple was, I think, told that the twin was adopted already by somebody else who only wanted one baby. You read different things. I think they were also, some people were also told that one of the twins had died. It doesn't really matter. What matters is, at 4 weeks old, these twin, identical twin boys are adopted to loving but different families. Okay, so both parents bring their new babies home, and both baby boys are named James. They also had another brother, also adopted. Both of their other brothers were named Larry. Both Jims had a dog as a child, and they both named their dog Toy, which I mean, I could see if it was Rex.
Yeah.
I've never met a dog named Toy. Have you ever met a dog named Toy?
No.
I've never. It's just not. That's weird, I think. I really do. All right. Both were the same height and weight and developed minor medical issues like tension headaches at the same age. Both brothers, both Jims, married a woman named Linda, but it didn't work out, unfortunately, and their first marriage ended in divorce. But then they both found love again and remarried, and their second wives were both named Betty. Both Jims named their first son James Allen. The only difference was Allen, the way Allen was spelled, was slightly different, but pronounced the same. So they both named their sons James Allen. They vacationed in the same Florida town, 3 blocks away from each other, for most of their adult lives. So the list goes on and on, but in my opinion, those are the most gripping. And how they ended up meeting was when one of their mothers went to register the birth certificate at the courthouse. The clerk apparently looked up at her and said, just super casually, like something like, oh, they named the other twin Jim too. And so she was just stunned. And over the years, she kept encouraging her son to try to find his biological twin. And finally, one year, he did. They didn't meet until they were 39 years old. And this was, as far as researchers were aware of, the longest period of time that a pair of identical twins had been spent time apart, so it made them really ideal research subjects. And in 1979, T.J. Bouchard began to study them and found similarities in twins, leading him to the conclusion that it was likely the cause of nature, meaning genetic in nature, and not nurture.
And you see, these kind of stories are what I mean. It's too much for me to be still called pure coincidence. I find it so fascinating. Twin stories are fascinating.
Yeah, it's so many coincidences. And there were more, but those were the biggies. There's another, there are other interesting twin stories, including the Bogota Four. We'll probably save that. That could be its own thing or a different weird coincidences episode if you like that one, but want like a sadder version, because that's a sadder story. But yeah, so I was actually, I think I was 39. Yeah, I was 39 when I met my biological family. And so I've known them about 5 years now, and it's great. They're wonderful. And it is so interesting to notice things from like physical looks to personality traits. It's just so interesting to see it when you've never seen it, you know? And Moose and Paul in particular, I think it's wild. Like the first time we met everybody, Moose just kept wandering around going, everybody looks like you. Everybody looks like you. This is crazy. You know, it's just, it's so interesting. But what's also interesting is how often people tell me I look like my dad, who I'm not biologically related to. But yeah, that's the nurture side, right? It's like I have my dad's same like really dry sense of humor where sometimes people think I'm just mean. And yeah, it's just kind of interesting. I don't know if I told you all the stuff about like when I met them. My biological mother and I have the same wedding anniversary, and they used to vacation in the town we lived in. I could go on and on. There's a lot. Also, if any patrons want, does anybody want an AMA on adoption or being adopted? I don't know. I feel like that's one of those things where people have a lot of questions, but they're always a little bit hesitant to ask. And I'm a super open book, obviously. And it's a very positive experience. So if you want to just ask me anything about that as a Patreon episode or any other subject you want to know anything about, let us know. All right, moving on. I think this next one is interesting.
It's super interesting, but also we're not 100% sure it's true or is it an urban legend or myth. So if Sir Anthony Hopkins is a hellion, please have your people call our people to confirm. Yes? Okay.
Could you imagine? It's so exciting.
So the story goes like this. It's the early 1970s and Anthony Hopkins has been cast in the film adaptation of the book The Girl from Petrovka alongside Goldie Hawn. Unsurprisingly, if you know the acting of Sir Anthony Hopkins. Unsurprisingly, Anthony Hopkins wanted to read the original novel by George Pfeiffer. The problem was he couldn't find a copy of the book anywhere. At some point he's either riding the tube or walking through a park when he sees a book left on a seat or a bench. The book was The Girl from Petrovka. Interestingly, it had notes in the margins already. Now, flash forward 2 years, the film is being shot and Hopkins meets the book's author, Pfeiffer. And he tells him about the lucky find of encountering this book he couldn't find anywhere, just, you know, lying there on a seat or a bench. Pfeiffer laughs and he tells Hopkins he had the opposite problem. He had loaned his copy of his own book to a friend who lost it. Hopkins, remembering now that there were some, you know, annotations made in the book, he goes and he gets the copy. And sure enough, it was the author's own lost copy.
I love that one. I don't care if it's so true wild. Or not. It gives me the goosebumps. I love it. I haven't seen the film, have you?
Yeah, but it's, Jesus, a long time ago. Did you know it was filmed in Austria?
Oh.
Yeah, because apparently they wanted to film it in Belgrade, but the Yugoslavian production company, or probably the ministry behind the Yugoslavian production company, they were too worried that they would offend the Soviet Union, because remember, it was the mid-70s.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is super interesting, though. Okay, so the next one we have is one that's really well-known in this country, but it has been really embellished over the years. So if your kids are listening to this, you'll have to tell me if this is still a big thing in junior high, which is when I first heard about it and was like, whoa. So, Johanna, do you know about all the coincidences between Kennedy and Lincoln?
Yeah, I think I heard about them, yeah.
Okay. So the story basically goes that there are just a whole bunch of uncanny coincidences involving presidents Kennedy and Lincoln. And I went to Snopes for this one. And I will link, of course, to the article so you can read everything that they've debunked. But let's talk about the things on the list that most people say are the coincidences, and we'll cross a few off. So it goes like this. Abraham Lincoln was elected to Congress in 1846. John F. Kennedy was elected to Congress in 1946. Abraham Lincoln was elected president in 1860. JFK was elected president in 1960. The names Lincoln and Kennedy each contain 7 letters. Both were particularly concerned with civil rights. Both wives lost children while living in the White House. Both presidents were shot in the head on a Friday. Lincoln's secretary Kennedy warned him not to go to the theater. Kennedy's secretary Lincoln warned him not to go to Dallas. Both successors were named Johnson. Andrew Johnson, who succeeded Lincoln, was born in 1808. Lyndon Johnson, who succeeded Kennedy, was born in 1908. John Wilkes Booth was born in 1839. Lee Harvey Oswald was born in 1939. Both assassins were known by their 3 names. Both names are comprised of 15 letters. Booth ran from the theater and was caught in a warehouse. Oswald ran from a warehouse and was caught in a theater. Booth and Oswald were assassinated before their trials.
Spooky.
Yeah.
So spooky.
So spooky.
It's a good one. It's good. And I just remembered all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are more, but I didn't list all of them because I think this list has grown since I first heard about it. There were like 4 things and now there's like 20. So now for the outright falsehoods. On those much longer lists, you'll find things that I didn't include, like both had vice presidents that were from the South. But like, of course they were, because they were both from the North. So it's just practicality in campaigning post-Civil War, right? Like that's not a surprise. Also, the probability of this whole 100 years thing, it's less impressive when you remember that our elections are every 4 years, or some of the lower offices every 2 years. If it was an annual election, it might be a little bit more impressive, but if things happen only every 4 years, then the odds are going to increase, right?
Yeah. Also, the part about both of their assassins were known with the, you know, 3 names. I don't know, I guess most of you probably know this already, but the reason why killers or murderers are known by, you know, first name, middle name, last name is to make sure no one thinks their neighbor John Robert Gacy, for example, is a murderous clown who buries people, you know, in the crawl space. It's just to clarify so people with the same first and last name aren't mistaken as murderers, which I think makes sense.
It does. Also, the Johnson last name isn't really that surprising. Any name ending in son is super common here, as well as in lots of other countries. So maybe if it was a less common name, but Johnson, sorry, not that spooky. Another issue, according to Snopes, quote, another coincidence that is no coincidence because it's plain wrong. Booth was born in 1838, not 1839. His birthday is typically fudged by a year to make it fit a predetermined pattern.
End and quote. That's what I hate. That's what I hate.
Yeah. That's what ruins things. Like, there's enough weird about it. Just leave it alone. You don't have to make it creepier. Also, it seemed Lincoln did have a secretary named Kennedy, but I don't think he necessarily ever told him not to go to the theater. Kennedy never had a secretary that anybody could ever find by the name of Lincoln. So we'll link to that Snopes page. There's more. I still think there's enough similarities to make it interesting to like a junior high or late middle schooler, even if scientifically speaking, honey, I know the coincidences have statistical probabilities that make them way less interesting, but I don't want to hear about it today. Yeah, this was just the first thing that kids, like I can remember in school, talking about being as like a spooky connection kind of thing. You know, this was my first conspiracy theory. It's like conspiracy theories 101.
Next, we have baby magnet Joseph Figlock. That's right. Baby magnet, not babe magnet.
Yeah, very different.
Many versions of this story say that he broke the fall of the same baby, same window, years apart. That's not quite true. But he did have not one, but two babies land on him after falling out of a window. Like, what are the chances?
That's too many babies,
yeah,
am I right?
Too many babies.
They were, everybody was okay. Don't worry, we're not joking about. But that's too many babies landing on you randomly as you're going about your business. Yeah.
So here's the article from the Detroit Free Press from Detroit, Michigan, 28th of September 1938, which was a Wednesday. And on page 2 you find, quote, "In freak mishap. Street worker hit in plunge of child. Twice victim in odd type of accident. For the second time within a year, Joseph Figlock, DPW worker, was involved in a type of freak accident at 10:10 a.m. Tuesday when a baby fell out of the sky and landed on Figlock's head. David Glenn Thomas, 2 years old, played too near a window in his fourth floor home at 77 East Canfield Avenue, police said, and fell out, striking Figlock, who was sweeping the alley below, on the head and shoulders. The boy was taken to receiving hospital with fractures of the thigh, arm and shoulder and an injured skull. Figlock, who was uninjured, said that he had escaped death and had saved a child's life almost a year ago when a baby girl fell in the same fashion and also from four floors above as Figlock worked on John R. Street near Hancock Avenue." End quote.
Yeah.
This is... yeah.
I don't know. I think breaking the fall of not one but two babies and saving them both when they landed on your head from above is a pretty interesting coincidence within the space of 1 year.
It's already an interesting coincidence if you're just down there sweeping the street, minding your own business. You're not looking up and trying to save the baby that you see falling, right? You're just down there and it lands on your head and you save it.
Yeah.
And then this happens twice. Like, what is going on in this town?
And how lucky those children were. I mean,
yeah.
The boy had... I read that, like, the injured skull was more of a superficial wound, and I hope that's true, but to fall out of a fourth story window onto toward concrete with, you know, a broken leg, a broken arm, and a broken shoulder, like, that's a miracle.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
You know.
I think that's amazing.
Twice. I don't know. It that's the kind of thing that makes you wonder, like, you know, when people
that's the
like,
kind of thing that makes you go, you want to say?
Those people, like, we all wonder sometimes, right? Like, is there any reason I'm here? Like, do I have a particular purpose in this life? But this guy for sure did. Figlock here, he knows. He saved two babies. That's amazing. And they went on to have, well, they had families that loved them. And
I may do another one of these and use all the really sad macabre stories I found that would have fit in this category. I kept finding things and I was like, ooh. And then I'd be like, nope. I just passed because I just needed something a little lighter this week. I have a lot of weird coincidences in my life, mostly around numbers and dates. And I know I talked about that before and I'm not going to get into it, but I really do think things like this are so interesting. And I don't know if you're an everything happens for a reason kind of person, then
yeah.
Coincidence is less.
Yeah, that's
I
me.
Don't know.
I'm more of
yeah.
This kind of person. Yeah.
What? Everything happens for a reason or
yeah.
That's just, yeah, me too.
Everything happens for a reason.
Me too. Whereas Paul will tell me the statistical probability of that thing happening, like real fast. He can do math in his head that I don't understand. But I find it interesting. Do you have anything good this week?
Yeah, I do. Our fence is almost done. So when my husband was here for 12 days, 10 out of these 12 days, he was working on building and on putting up the fence. But it's a lot of work and he couldn't finish it. And now my mom's husband came over the last 2 days and we did a lot of it together, and I think we need one more day and then it's done, and then I can let it, because so far we just had like this little wall, like knee height wall. And obviously mm-hmm. the dogs, they were good and everything, but when they saw a cat or a squirrel or a biker or something like this, they jumped over and they ran off and I had to chase them down. And I don't want to do that. And I want to use the garden in summer and be outside working. And the fence is almost done. And that's something good. I'm very happy about that.
Oh, yeah. That's huge. When we finally, it took us a little while to fence in our yard just to... Our yard is big, so to save up the money to fence it in was, it took a little bit. Once it was fenced in and you could let, you know, just let the dog outside without panicking that they were gonna, you know. And also, doesn't it seem like if your dog gets loose or like takes off after something, so help me God, it always happens like when I am in my least presentable daytime pajamas.
I mean, but that's just, again, statistical probability because...
Yeah. I always run into people from high school when I go home if I don't put makeup on. And I never wear makeup, so...
Yeah. Hey. Weird, right? Creepy.
So strange. My something good this week is Moose is here. She's here right now, so we're going to nip this in the bud. But it's just really nice. She came to visit me just overnight, but it's nice having the... Having the company and help Auntie Moose is helping me with Opus. He just absolutely adores her. So, yeah, it's nice. It's nice having company. And that's it. That's really all I've got.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like our episodes or most of our episodes, you don't have to like every single one of our episodes. It's fine. But if you do like us in general, please go over to iTunes and leave us a rating and or review. We really do appreciate it. We love your kind words and it also helps us out a lot.
It does.
You can find all the info about where to reach us, our PO box, links to our merch store, links to our Patreon, links to our Facebook group on our homepage, www.freshhellpodcast.com. Talking about Patreon, if you are interested in our Patreon, please either go, as I said, to our webpage or to patreon.com and search Fresh Hell and we'll pop up. There you see all the tiers and what we're doing. We have one tier where we do a monthly game night. So far we are playing Cards Against Humanity. I think we will do a trivia night sometime when we figure all the technicalities out.
We're still trying to master Cards Against Humanity, so let's not rush things there. Like,
but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's so much fun.
Please tell your pets that we say hi. We love them. We miss them. Hug them, cuddle them, whoop them on the nose. Always treat them kindly and as well as you can.
Yes.
And that's it. That's all, folks.
That's it. Until next week, if you're going through hell,
keep going. Tschüss.
Bye.